Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Kim Shri Mashurair Vibhudhair Asam Yuga Vikattanaihi Raho Jusha Kim Horina Shambhuna Vavanokasa Kim Indrein Alpavirena Bhamana Vatapasyata Kim Kshema Shurair Vibhudair Asam Yuga Vikottanai Raho Jusha Kim Horina Shambhuna Vavanokasa Kim Indrin Alpavirena Brahmana Vatapasyata Kshima. In a place where there is a scarcity of the ability to fight. To Shurahi, by the demigods. Vibhudaihi, by such powerful persons. Asam Yuga Vikottanaihi, by boasting and talking uselessly away from the fighting. Rahat Jusha, who is living in a solitary place. Within the core of the heart. Kim Harina. What is the fear from Lord Vishnu? Shambhuna. And what is the fear from Lord Shiva? Va. Either. Vana Okasa. Who is living in the forest. Kim Indrina. What is the fear from Indra? Alpavirena. He is not at all powerful. Having no power to fight with you. Brahmana. And what is the fear from Brahma? Va. Either. Tapasyata. Who is always engaged in meditation. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. The demigods boast uselessly while away from the battlefield. Only when there is no fighting can they show their prowess. Therefore, from such demigods, we have nothing to fear. As for Lord Vishnu, he is in seclusion in the core of the hearts of the yogis. As for Lord Shiva, he has gone to the forest. And for Lord Brahma, he is always engaged in austerities and meditation. The other demigods, headed by Indra, are devoid of prowess. Therefore, you have nothing to fear. Purport. Kamsa's ministers told Kamsa that all the exalted demigods had fled in fear of him. One had gone to the forest, one to the core of the heart, and one to engage in tapasya. Thus you can be free from all fear of the demigods. They said, just prepare to fight. This is arrogance. This is the arrogance of the demons. They think that they can ignore the supremacy of God and the power of the servants of God. But it's gotten even worse. In modern times, people who have no power will even deny that God exists. It's one thing to say that God is hiding somewhere, and therefore it won't meddle in our life. That's one idea. That God is there, God is supreme. But he has no business with us, and he doesn't care what we do. So he's not going to interfere. But much worse than that is out and out atheism, to deny, to just assume there is no God. There are no heavenly beings. Man is the sum and substance of all life. He is the culmination of the chain of life. He has dominion over everything, and it's just a matter of time before humankind is victorious over all the limitations of nature, and we will become immortal without drinking soma juice. Just by our science and our technology, we will conquer the world. This is demoniac. That is totally demoniac. At least these ancient demons had a little bit of intelligence. They recognized the existence of God, at least. But they thought that they could conquer the demigods, and that Krishna would not interfere. Vishnu would not interfere. Because he's hiding in the heart of the yogis, and he's not going to come out. And Lord Shiva has desisted also from all worldly affairs, and he's sitting in the forest with his wife. And Lord Brahma is up there on Brahmaloka, beyond our realm, even way above the demigods. The inhabitants of the highest planets, Janoloka, Tapoloka, Satyaloka, they don't engage in any mundane affairs. They don't have fights, so they're not going to come down and pick a fight with us. Brahma, no fear from Brahma. He's sitting and doing his meditation on his lotus flower. And as far as the demigods, who are actual antagonists, we can beat them, no problem. This is very arrogant for provincial king's ministers sitting in Mathura to claim that they can easily defeat the demigods. There's allusion to some historical occurrence when Kamsa apparently did this in the past, that he challenged successfully Indra and shot him in the back with his arrows because Indra was scared and running away from him. Maybe this is in his previous life, when he was one of the big asuras. Kalanimi? Might be. Another speculation. Maybe this is as Kalanimi that he defeated Indra. But actually, these demons, these are big demons coming down from the higher planets to take part at the end of the Dwarpa Yuga of the proxy battle between the demons and the demigods on the face of the earth, that culminated finally in the Battle of Kurukshetra. So Kamsa's ministers are not small-time, insignificant daityas. They actually are taking birth on the earth, coming from higher planets. So they actually can claim some ability to stand up to the demigods and even sometimes defeat them. Still, there may be some truth in what such demons say. It is true that Lord Vishnu is hiding in the heart, and he's not showing himself to just anyone. And he's also not interfering, not directly, in whatever the rebellious living entities want to try to do. The Supersoul, as the Supersoul, the Lord does not interfere. But he has his agents. He may be sitting in the heart himself, but his agents are everywhere. Yamaraj explained this to the Yamadutas. You know, don't think that any sinful activity will go unpunished. There are 10 witnesses. The sun, the moon, the wind, the directions. I don't know who are the other ones. Yes? Water. So you do any nonsense, these witnesses are watching you. You can, you know, try to hide from Vishnu in the heart, close the windows and the doors, and think that the demigods are not watching, but the air is there. Can you hide from the air? Can you hide from the directions? You may close the doors so the sun and the moon don't get in, but the air is there. So there are witnesses watching everything we do. Vishnu is not interfering with us personally, but through his agents, we don't get away with any nonsense. Every transgression of the law of God is punished in due course of time. The agents of God see that justice is always done. But the demons don't understand this. They deny it. They think that they can actually go against the pleasure of God by opposing his appointed servants, the demigods, and by breaking various laws of nature. It's a law of nature that one who is powerful should be compassionate to the weak. But the demigods, the demons, are just the opposite. They take their power and they use it as much as they can to abuse and oppress the weak. That's what it means to be a demon. Demigods are powerful, the demons are powerful. But the demigods use their power for the good of others. And the demons use their power for their own selfish good and for the oppression of others. And they're so foolish, their intelligence is so imperfect. Although they've got there's some seed of truth in what they say, but it's half invalid, three quarters invalid. They really think that Vishnu, Shiva, Brahma, and Indra can do nothing to them. But actually, the servants of the Lord are always victorious. Jayastu Panduputranam Yesham Pakshe Janardanaha. The Pandavas were destined to be victorious over Duryodhana and his crew. Even though for so long it seemed unlikely, it seemed that Duryodhana had the upper hand. The Pandavas were oppressed for years, and they were helpless. Because they were so dharmic, they could not go against their principles to simply smash Duryodhana. They had to bide their time. Especially Bhima was frustrated for so long that he couldn't just grab Duryodhana in his bare hands and strangle him. So many times he wanted to. But in due course of time, they were victorious over their enemies, over their opponents. And it was destined that they would be victorious. Jayastu Panduputranam Yesham Pakshe Janardanaha. There must be victory for the Pandavas, because Lord Janardana is on their side. Yatra Yogeshwaro Krishna, Yatra Parto Danur Daraha, Tatra Shrir Vijayo Bhutir Dhruvanitir Matir Mama. Last word of the Bhagavad Gita. The last instruction of Krishna is Sarva Dharmam Parityaja. But the last comment by the narrator Sanjaya is, wherever there is the master of mystic power, Yogeshwara Krishna, and wherever there is Partha, the son of Pritha, with his bow, Arjuna, whenever the two of them are together, there must be victory. Tatra Shrir, there must be all opulence victory and success, prosperity. No question of it. The devotees will always prevail over their opponents. Krishna also said, Konteya, Pratijani hi, name bhakta pranasyati. O son of Kunti, you are the son of a virtuous and powerful Kshatriya lady. Be confident that my devotee will never perish. Material nature cannot defeat him. No human or demigod or demon opponent can ever defeat him. Devotee never perishes, never is defeated. It's the responsibility for his own good that a devotee have full confidence in this promise of Krishna, that we're never, if we are faithful devotees and we depend and trust Krishna, even if we're helpless and we have no other shelter but Krishna, we will never perish. That we should have full confidence in. If we're feeling anxiety, fear, insecurity, whether it's financial insecurity or worry about our health or about our relationships, our family and others, it's because we don't trust what Krishna said. We don't trust that Krishna is in complete control, and we don't trust that he's our friend. Suridam sarvabhutanam. He's not only Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, the absolute Lord of everything. Not only is he completely in control, if he was only that absolute dictator and wasn't our friend, then we'd be afraid of him. We'd have reason to be afraid of him. Maybe he'll do harm to us. Maybe for his selfish purposes he'll smash us, use us, exploit us unfairly. But he's also Suridam Sarvabhutanam, the best well-wishing friend of every living being. Every living being. Not only a few chosen friends with whom he sides and takes care of them and not everybody else, but he takes care of everybody. Eko bahunam yo vididati kaman. He satisfies the desires and fulfills the needs of everyone. How can you accept and believe that statement and then figure that everyone, but I'm the exception. Krishna will take care of everybody, because he says that, but he's not going to take care of me. How can we think like that? We do. You know, at the same time we're chanting Bhagavad Gita and preaching it, and telling everybody, Krishna says that he protects everybody. He's everybody's well-wishing friend, and he's particularly the friend and protector of his devotees. But I'm an exception. Krishna's not going to protect me. That is not very intelligent, not consistent. That's not practicing what you preach. You're telling others to trust Krishna and you don't trust Krishna. The devotees, including the demigods, are always victorious. Demigods sometimes have difficulty because they're not pure devotees. There's conditions. They have material desires. They sometimes do things that Krishna doesn't really like. They don't always act exclusively for Krishna's pleasure. Sometimes they do things they shouldn't do. And therefore, they have to suffer somewhat, and their lives are somewhat complicated, and they're not always immediately victorious. They sometimes are temporarily defeated. As we're reading about Bali Maharaj taking over heaven. Now, he's technically a demon. He's one of the opponents of the demigods. You may say, well, but he's the grandson of Prahlad, who is a great devotee. And by the influence of Prahlad, Bali's not an ordinary demon. But he's the head of the demon army. And his ministers and friends, supporters, are all the old-fashioned regular demons. You know, Haiti, Prahaiti, and Puloma, and all the others. The same crew of demons that have always been the avowed haters of the demigods, their rivals. Bali is their leader, and he's led them into victory. And now he's the king of heaven, and all these other demons are occupying the posts of the various demigods. This is a great defeat for the demigods. This happens sometimes, that the demigods have serious setbacks and serious complications and embarrassments in their lives because they're not pure devotees. Yes, Krishna protects his devotee. He protects everybody in a general way. There's two different kinds of protection. And they're actually identified as two separate topics among the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam. There is sthanam and poshanam. Sthanam is the general maintenance and protection of everybody in the universe. Arrangements for everyone's benefit. The general infrastructure. Provision of basic needs for everybody and even individual needs. The super soul is taking individual care of every creature. But there's special protection. Poshanam. Like a father taking care of his children in a way that he doesn't take care of all the children. He has his own family that he takes special care of. So Krishna's own family are his devotees. And he takes additional special care of them. That is poshanam. Two kinds of maintenance and protection. General and special. The pure devotees get this more complete protection. The non-devotees get just general facilities of life and general protection. But they're very much subject to the laws of nature. If they do bad, they have to suffer. If they do good, they can enjoy. And they can get liberation if they go about the regular means of getting it. Otherwise, they're in Maya, the general living entities. But they're taken care of and protected by the Supreme Lord. The pure devotees get full protection. They never suffer. But in between, the mixed devotees, those who are devotees but still somewhat materialistic, they get a certain percentage of full protection. They still have to be purified. You can say devotees are fully protected. But a neophyte devotee who is not fully surrendered and who needs to be purified, Krishna will protect him by arranging for the purification. And so thus the suffering of a devotee is actually not inflicted by Maya, but it's inflicted by Krishna and his agents for their purification. Whereas the demons, they're destined to suffer. In one sampradaya, I won't mention names, they actually believe that the real demons are not only circumstantially infected by the mode of ignorance, but their souls are composed of ignorance. They are tamasic jivas. And they are eternal enemies of God. And they may not realize it. They have to undergo their process of self-realization to realize that they're actually eternal enemies of God. And to become full-fledged demons and then be cast down into hellish punishment eternally. This is one viewpoint, not ours. We don't ascribe to that view. We say that being a demon is a circumstance and it can be rectified. Because the covering of the mode, we're not made of ignorance, we're just covered by ignorance. Tamogun. But what happens to the demons? How does Krishna protect or deal with them? He lets them become arrogant. He lets them try to be lords of nature, lords of the universe. And this Asarik Bhava takes over their whole awareness. Krishna describes in his own words, idam maya labdam, imam prapsye manodatam, idam apime bhavishyati punardhanam. I've attained this wealth and power, and I will continue to work and obtain more wealth and power. I will become richer and richer. Adyo bhijanavan asmi, konyo sti sadvisho maya. I am so rich, and I have such good family and powerful followers. Who is there equal to me in the whole world? Yakshed, anyway, Yakshe Dasyami Modisha. I will do some rituals, some religious rituals, offer some sacrifice. I'll give some charity, and I will enjoy life. I'll destroy all my enemies. I've already killed so many, and I'll kill anybody else who gets in my way. This is the demoniac spirit. It's very it's based on false pride. Kamsa's enemies, Kamsa's rather advisors, are speaking very proudly that they're audaciously claiming that they have no reason to fear Vishnu or any of the demigods, even Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. And they're wrong. Vishnu may be sitting in the heart, but he has appeared now on the outside as the eighth son of Devaki, and they're going to have to deal with him. And these same advisors are going to be sent to try to destroy Krishna, and one by one, Krishna is going to very easily, as his pastime sport, dispose of each one of them for their foolish arrogance. Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
You mentioned the demons are, it's just a circumstantial situation. But this mother, they say that they're composed of harmony, nature. But then when this, if this is said at a point to someone, then at that point, if he looks into his own heart, then he'll see that all those descriptions of demons are all those qualities which characterize demons are all full fledged present in his heart.
Yes.
So at that point, if he thinks, okay, so if I were one of those tamasic whom they are saying, then there's no point in me, because no matter whatever purification I do, eternally I'm not going to get. So this kind of an attitude is very probable in a person.
Yes.
So then, while stating that, how will they, they have to answer other things also, which are obvious doubts that arise when they make such a statement? Or are we to understand that it's just like that making derogatory remarks about, just like that ad hominem, that you make derogatory remarks?
Well, there's always the assumption that we who are sitting and listening to the gospel, we're the saved ones. And the people who are sitting outside the church, you know, they're all the ones that are going to go to hell. There's always that assumption that the congregation is going to be saved. You know, we few are going to be saved, and the other ones are the demons. So usually, you know, therefore in the Madhva Sampradaya, you know, those who are listening have the confidence that they're not the demons. Otherwise, the demons don't listen. So the fact that I'm sitting and faithfully listening and trying to follow is evidence that I'm not a demon. I remember when I first read the Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, I read that 16th chapter and I said, oh no, this is me. Yeah. And then I read that verse, Kaunteya, now don't worry, Arjun, you're not a demon, Krishna told. Because Krishna was concerned, maybe Arjun, after hearing the description of the demon, he'll think that I'm a demon. Arjun might think he's a demon. Smashuchak. What does it have, the words? Yeah, don't worry, Arjun. You belong to the other class. You're a devotee. So that possibility is there. That hearing the description of the bad people, you might think you're one of them. Krishna considered that Arjun might think that, and therefore he assured him, "Don't worry, Arjun. I'm assuring you, you're not one of those demons. You're my devotee." So that's how it's handled. You know, everybody who's in the congregation and has paid their dues is assured that you're saved. It's just those other people outside who are going to hell. We shouldn't be so sure of ourselves. Maybe we won't become, full-fledged demons, but as soon as you want to see the demoniac nature, just stop chanting your rounds for 2 or 3 days and see what starts creeping up in your heart. Remember what you were like before you started chanting. So just to be present in Kali Yuga without the protection of the holy name and the association of Vaishnavas means immediate infection by the demoniac nature. We have to stay within the fold. But that doesn't mean we should be overconfident that just because we're sitting inside the church that we're saved automatically. We can fall down. And if we stop our sadhana, if we break the regulative principles, if we leave the association of devotees, then we will be infected. It's not that we've turned into some other species of life that can't be infected. We're very easily, very susceptible to the infection of the demoniac nature if we don't stay protected. Okay, that's the nature of Kali Yuga. You can't go outside the association of Vaishnavas and have any, not to speak of spiritual life, you can't have any auspicious life. You can't be a civilized human being outside the association of Vaishnavas. Okay. Yes, Bhagavad Gita? Sorry.
You explained that the demigods, they are not pure devotees, but some because they have a material desire. But how is it possible that some demigods like Yamaraj or Brahma is in the position of Mahajana?
Yes. In general, demigods have some material desires, but it varies from individual to individual. And it doesn't mean that some of the devotees, demigods, are not pure devotees. Some are. Just like the general population, most people are materialists, just ordinary humans. But there are some pure devotees. So there's also some pure devotees among the demigods. And the 12 Mahajans are pure devotees. Including Yamaraj. He's heads above the ordinary demigods. Okay? Yeah. Kishore?
Sometimes I also
wonder
about tamasic souls.
Is
this coming?
Or should
you
off? Yes. About tamasic souls in Madhva Sampradaya, they have this doctrine. But is this coming from Madhva himself or
yes.
later?
No, unless I read it wrong, I see this in the writings of Madhvacharya himself. I read the Dashapakaranas, the 10 short books that he wrote explaining his philosophy. I read most of them. But I did read them with Jayatirtha's commentary. So maybe I was misled by the commentary, but I think I saw it in Madhva's own writings, this doctrine of jivas actually being constitutionally in each of the modes. Vidvangaranga is insistent that this is not correct, that if we properly study Madhva's commentaries, Madhva's own writings, without looking at the commentaries, because he says the commentaries are distorting even Jayatirtha's commentary. But this needs to be researched. I'm not that Vidvangaranga Prabhu in Mayapur, he has that opinion, but I don't think he's right. And I'm giving him his chance to do the research and show it. So this is, as far as we're concerned, we're not sure. As far as I see Madhvacharya saying that himself. Okay. Hare Krishna. You have some insight on that? Okay.
What about statement of Madhvacharya about Balaram?
Madhvites say that. I don't know where they get it from. So I don't know. Maybe it is. I haven't seen this. I haven't read that much to see that statement.
Okay. They say there's Avesha of Vishnu. So they say that sometimes he is Vishnu himself.
Sometimes Baladev is Vishnu.
But sometimes he is Shesha. They don't agree Shesha is Vishnu.
Sometimes, but what about 5,000 years ago when he appeared as Krishna's birth.
There. So in that span of 120 years, in that span, sometimes he's Vishnu and sometimes he's...
You mean during that time he's being Vishnu sometimes and not being Vishnu?
Yes.
In the same body?
In the same body. Just like they say...
How does that work? I don't know.
They believe a lot in this Sannidhana. Like they say Shankaracharya is Maniman, the demon.
Yeah.
So, but he has got Avesha of Lord Shiva. So whenever...
And that Avesha comes and goes?
Yeah, whenever he's writing stotras like Vijayagovindam, Vijayagovindam, then the Shiva will be speaking.
Yeah.
But other times when he's speaking Mayavad, it's Maniman who is speaking.
It's like a radio broadcast tuning in and out. Yeah, that's pretty complicated.
And even that name that comes in Vishnudasaranam, Halayudha.
Yes.
So there it's directly indicative of Baladev, because Halayudha, Vishnu has no other display holding Hala as his Ayudha.
Yes.
So
that's Vishnu.
So there they say that Halayudha, you should not read it as Halayudha. Ralayudha or Abheda, that Katyayani Sutra they use. Ralayor Abhedattva, Ra and La are not, can be interchangeably used.
So Haradara?
So they make it Harayudaha, and they say that Harayudaha, Harasya Ayudaha, Tripurasura Samhare, in the destruction of Tripura,
Shiva's weapon.
He became Shiva's weapon. So Vishnu was present in the weapon of Shiva, so it's Harayudha, you should not read it as Harayudha. And, but they,
so they don't want to say that Baladev has a club weapon?
Yeah, but they say that it's not. Because it's referring to...
I mean, not a club, a plow.
Yeah, a plow. They say that Baladev is having plow as a weapon.
But that's not Vishnu.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, if you want to stipulate it as Halayudha only, then you must know that it's referring to Baladev only when he is Vishnu. So...
He's a part-time Vishnu. Part-time Vishnu. Okay, I didn't know about part-time Vishnu. Okay, that's too complicated for me. Yes.
I don't know this as well, because Baladev many times he goes opposite to Krishna, and sometimes he seems to make fun of Krishna, and many times
it's his bigger brother.
Yeah. So, but that rasa was not there. Like that kind of rasa would not be accommodated when one.
Oh, that's why they're telling, because he sometimes against.
Because yeah. because he talks back to Krishna, therefore he can't be God. Okay. All right. But this is Vraja Rasa, Vraja Bhakti. Everybody's talking back to Krishna and Vraja. Yeah. The also wives are coming complaining about him. Everybody's complaining about him. Yes, sir?
The normal explanation given when somebody asks, it looks like devotees also suffer and non-devotees also suffer. Is that, it's apparent, but are there ways to explain?
Well, suffering has a purpose also. So we want to see suffering is unavoidable in the material world. But what is accomplished by your suffering? If there's got to be suffering, at least maybe it could be put to good use. So devotees are purified by their suffering. And everybody can be purified by suffering if they accept it in the right way. It can even lead them to becoming devotees. And you can also answer devotees are not suffering in the same way. You can't judge from the outside. Two people are suffering the same injury, but one person is experiencing it in a different way than the other person. The same physical trauma, but psychologically they're taking it differently. The noble, powerful person is practically not even aware of his injury. He may have a serious injury and not even be disturbed by it. Whereas a coward, you just scratch him and he's in panic. So you have to not just judge by what happens physically, but how the consciousness is affected. So the consciousness of the devotee, you don't think the devotees are suffering like other people. You don't know their consciousness. This is the thing, is people judge devotees superficially, and therefore they misjudge. They don't know what's going on inside.
And Prabhu, when Krishna says, Name Bhakta Prana Chakra, so if we see it in another way, does it mean that in the same life, the devotee is never defeated and ultimately
makes it back with his defeat means again another birth, or you know, because if you look at it that way, every living entity is ultimately going to go back some point.
Well, then you can talk about everybody being, in the ultimate sense, a devotee, but they have to, you know, they have to realize they're devotees and start acting like devotees to get the benefit of that.
Yeah, so my question was...
But a devotee is not destroyed. He may undergo temporary setback, but in the long run, he succeeds. A devotee may fall down in this lifetime, but in the next lifetime he will pick up his devotional service and continue. And ultimately he will succeed. He will get love of God. This is true of those who are actively trying to be devotees in a much more real sense than it's you know, theoretically true about everybody. Those who are working to realize themselves as devotees of Krishna, Krishna assures that they will be successful, if not immediately, and even if not in this lifetime, soon enough they will be successful. It takes effort, it may even take more than one lifetime, but the success is guaranteed.
The place where I doubt, I have doubt, and it keeps resurfacing every time,
yes,
is when the pure devotee seems to see everyone executing devotional service, and,
Well, for the pure devotee,
may not be wrong also.
Yes.
So how can it be
wrong? Yeah, but he's seeing things, the pure devotee is seeing things in a special light. He can see how everybody's being saved. But we don't have that vision. We have to see things through our own eyes. You know, a pure devotee has some special insight that we can't have, not yet. So we have to, you know, understand things according to our capacity. You know, success means that you don't have to take birth and die again, that you don't have to suffer old age and disease and mental anxiety. That's success in life. That we can understand, because we understand birth, death, disease, old age, those things we've experienced. You know, that we can understand. So perfection is freedom from all these things that we don't like. That is promised us. That is our success. We don't understand. We don't know what real spiritual life is like. We have no concept of it. Infinite pleasure, loving love of God. We don't know what that is. This is a word for us. But we do know what freedom from all the miseries that we're familiar with is, would be. You know, so in those terms, we can understand. Krishna is promising us that. That we won't have to do all these things we don't like doing and have all these things happen to us. We'll be free from it. Maybe not immediately, but gradually we'll get that freedom. That's our success. And we won't fail. We're promised we'll succeed in achieving that. It doesn't mean that every individual endeavor we make is going to be automatically successful. That's just relative, temporary success. But the ultimate success is guaranteed.
I'm not talking about
understanding
that one is executing devotion, because if I put two, three things together, then it gets confusing. That's when it gets confusing.
How?
One is that the pure devotee, he does not see himself as executing devotion. It's not only...
He doesn't see himself as...
executing devotion. He thinks he's not a devotee. And he's convinced of that. And then he sees other people executing pure devotion.
Yeah.
And then there is this... conversation apparently where Ramanujacharya wants to ask Ranganatha, and he asks him, you know, is Antasmriti important? I mean, is it the only thing? When I believe he gets a reply that if my devotee does not remember me, I will remember my devotee.
Yes.
So, you know, I mean, these three statements, I'm not able to, you know, it gets confusing when everything's put together.
I'm not sure how it's confusing.
In terms of the pure devotee,
yeah,
does not seem to
think himself a devotee.
Yeah, that's.
But he does. I mean, he's also confident that he's Krishna's servant and that Krishna will protect him.
Yes.
He's confident of Krishna. Otherwise, he hasn't attained Sharanagati.
Right.
If he doesn't, he's not confident of Krishna's protection.
Right.
Even though I'm not a devotee, Krishna's protecting me for some reason or other.
Right.
So he
sees other people executing devotional service.
Yes.
So that means that, meaning if he sees that since he's a pure devotee, he cannot entirely be wrong. So those people seem to be executing devotional service, but they are unaware of the fact that they're executing devotional service. They cannot realize that they're doing devotional service. But they are actually doing devotional service.
How?
Because a pure devotee is seeing them as...
That's a pure devotee's vision. You're trying to think the way the pure devotee thinks. That's invalid. When we filter it through our intelligence, it comes out wrong. Because in the ordinary sense, that we can understand the execution of devotional service, those people aren't practicing devotional service. You know, that's a pure devotee's vision. We can't imitate that. We can't try to see things the way the pure devotee does. You know, not people, you know, the most massive people in the world are not serving Krishna. They're serving Krishna only, far as we can understand, only in the sense that, you know, you have, you know, they're working, and Krishna is the ultimate controller, so they're working for Krishna. But they're totally unconscious of that. They don't want to work for Krishna. They don't want to acknowledge Krishna. So it's completely unwilling and unconscious service of Krishna, as far as we can understand. You know, you can say, well, pure devotee understands how they're all serving Krishna in pure love, but we cannot see that. We're not capable of seeing it. So we can't enter that into our, you know, our calculations or our logic, because it's something beyond our understanding. A pure devotee can, in his thinking, accommodate apparent contradictions that we can't. He's thinking on a higher level. He's seeing things on a higher level. So we shouldn't try to understand that, how it is. Yeah.
But we have to assume that it's true. We assume that
it's true. It's true in some way, but some way that we cannot understand. Better we understand how Krishna is protecting everybody and especially his devotees in terms that we can comprehend. You know, start thinking about how everybody, there's no sense in our, you know, sitting here and thinking how everybody's serving Krishna. You know, then what's the use of preaching if everybody's already serving Krishna? The problem is that from our point of view, people aren't serving Krishna. If we think like Paramahamsas, that everybody's already in love of God, then there's no need to do anything for anybody. Then the preaching stops and we just sit here and pretend that everything's perfect. But that we don't have the adhikar for that. We don't have the vision to see how everybody's serving Krishna. Well, I don't know if that was what he was asking about exactly. He was asking, I mean, that was specifically a question of whether you have to be able to think of Vishnu at exactly the time of death, because you may you may not be in a good condition to do that at the time of death. So the Lord assured him, don't worry, if he devotee doesn't remember me, I'll remember him. That's just assurance that I'll protect you. You just practice devotional service, and even if you make a mistake at the time of death, I'll make up for it.
Yeah. Okay.
That's assurance to the devotee that I'll protect you.
So it actually is in line with the name of the...
Yeah. Especially my devotee doesn't perish. A non-devotee, because he doesn't remember Krishna at the time of death, he's got to go to Yamaraj. But a devotee, Krishna will protect him, so he doesn't have to go to Yamaraj. Krishna appreciates. We've been trying all our life to serve him. So even if we don't do the right thing at the time of death, Krishna will compensate for it.
Yeah, because there are so many other instances where it says that, you know, if you had a little bit of, you know, if you had touched Gopi Chandra at the time of your death, or if you had Tulsi,
yes,
these things, this is assured
liberation, are the statements,
yes,
are the statements factual or, you know, that?
Yes, but they can be qualified. If someone is committing aparads or has committed aparads, he has to pay for them. The liberation may be postponed. In general, when liberation is guaranteed, you can add the condition for small type. Any aparads have to be taken care of first, which may mean a postponement to a later lifetime. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.